Hi, my name is Gideon Rothstein. This is a response of the day for the 29th day of Adar Sheni. I just want to point out, I don't know what cultural references people do or don't know, but a few years ago, a guy named Stephen Colbert, who had a late-night comedy show on Comedy Central called The Colbert Report, finished his run there because he was moving over to CBS to become the host of The Late Show, which he still does. So if you don't know about that, then you don't know about that. But on the last day that he was having his Colbert Report, he says, "Welcome to the Colbert Report. And if this is your first time here, I have terrible news for you because it's his last day and you're not going to be able to have any more episodes of The Colbert Report." Happens to be the 29th of Adar Sheni is the last time I am taping, as far as I know. I may have to go back and make up ones that I missed, but as far as I know, the last one I'm taping a response of a day, because Adar Sheni didn't happen in the year. I started this in Tavshin Ayin Vav, actually, in Sivan of Tavshin Ayin Vav. I went into Tavshin Ayin Zion 5777, which eventually became 2017. And I'm finishing it up in Tavshin Ayin Chet, which will turn into one day 2018. And there's no other Sheni in either of those years. There's only another Sheni in Tavshin Ayin Tet and 5719, which will be 2018, 2019. So if you're listening to this now, I've taped these Shiurim a while back, and this is the last one. But in contrast to the Colbert Report, it's not the last one, because the response of the day, thanks to the OU and Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser, will be online for the foreseeable future, for as far as long as we know, and you can begin learning them at any time you want and can spend a year having a half-hour a day shiur, where you increase and expand your halachic knowledge and your acquaintance with various important mishivim, various important respondents of our past. So for the 29th day of Adar Sheni, from Tuf Reish Yud Gimel, from 1853, we have a Shut Binyan Tzion. Rav Yaakov Etlinger has a response of Binyan Tzion, Siman Yud Gimel, response of number 13. And the discussion is about a Sefer Torah that got mixed in with others, but it's going to raise a lot of issues that are relevant to Kashrus issues. So it'll be a quick review of important Kashrus issues that face us. So the question is, they had a Sefer Torah, and they knew that there had been some error in it. They didn't remember where the error was. They knew there was an error in it, an error that invalidated the Sefer Torah, and they knew the error was in Breshit, was in the book of Breshit, and then this Sefer Torah got mixed in with others that were assumed or known to be Ksherim, that they had no problems in them, the Sefer Torah, and they looked through, you try to look through all of Breshit, there's a lot of Breshit, so they looked through all of Breshit and all the Sefer Torah, and they couldn't find the one that had the problem. They knew there was a problem, so this is, you know there's a problem, but you don't remember where the problem was, you check and you can't find the problem again. And now, they have to read the Torah in one of the Starim of Breshit. So let's say this happened, you know, on a Sunday. The Torah got mixed in. They're spending the whole week to look. And that week, it's, I don't know, Vayera. It's Chayisar. It's whatever it is. And they have to read. These are all the Torahs they have. Can they read from one of these Torahs and make a bracha on it? Or do they have to find some other Sefer Torah that they have more, or that they don't have any reason to think might have a problem in it? So the fundamental question is, what is the status of a Sefer Torah that's not valid, that got mixed in with Sefer Torah, that got mixed in with Torah scrolls that were valid? So, the Binyan Tzion, Rav Yaakov Etlinger, writing in 1853, says, this has already been discussed among the Achronim. So, Shut Yad Eliyahu. Now, let me just throw in an embarrassing fact about life, is that I saw the Yad Eliyahu referred to by the Binyan Tzion. At the time, I must not have looked it up. But now I looked up, I said, do I have that in my Bar Ilan responsa? I don't think I do. And then it turns out that I do. And I just never knew about it, I think, because his name never comes up, because he never dated his Tshuvot. So it's a reminder that for all that I am, through this project, getting to acquaint myself with Mishivim, with respondents who I didn't know before, there are also plenty who I never got to meet just because of the ways that I chose to select them. I ended up, you know, lopping off many important people. So the Yad Eliyahu was the old Rebbe Shmuel. He was born in Lublin in Poland around 5420, around 1660. He studied in Brisk, although Brisk at the time wasn't what we think of it as today because he didn't have Brisk Torah yet. But he became an important Rav, and he has Yad Eliyahu that he published in 1712 in 5472. So Yad Eliyahu is an Achron from the late 17th, early 18th century in the non-Jewish calendar. So he ruled that if a Sefer Torah gets mixed in with others, you can read one of them, and the reasoning he gave was, because b'chad b'trei batil. So chad b'trei batil is a concept from bitl. Bitl, let's remember, is nullification. in halacha, if items get mixed together, there's all sorts of ways they can do it. So let's say, you know, orange juice gets mixed with wine, gets mixed with milk, or whatever it is in halacha. So that's called lach belach. That is moist or liquid mixtures are mixing together. They more thoroughly mix. But all that's, another thing you could have is that you could have 17 steaks get mixed together, right? 17 pieces of meat that are indistinguishable to us, but they have no contact with each other. Yes, they're mixed in a group because we don't know which is which, but they're not interfering, they're not interacting with each other anyway. So there the general rule is chad betray batel. We go by what's called bitl biro. As long as we know there are two good kosher or valid pieces compared to one not, then we're comfortable with that. Now, if the proportions were different, then that would be fine. But we're talking about one piece, meaning 5 to 1 could also work. If you had 17 bad pieces and 18 good pieces, that would also work. The reason we say chad betray is because when you have only one piece of prohibited material, then you need two other pieces to outweigh it. So here, too, at the Sefer Torah, he's saying, as long as there were more than two of the good Sifrei Torah, of the good Torah scrolls, you should be fine. Now, the challenge in claiming that is, and the Yad Eliyahu addressed it, is that a Sefer Torah is what's called a Dover Chashuv. So in the laws of Bittul, the laws of nullification, if the item that's a problem is a davar chashuv, is important in some way, then we say it has enough of a character, enough of a significance of its own, that we don't follow the usual rules of Bittul. So the Eliyahu said, you're right that the Sefer Torah is davar chashuv, and that could have theoretically affected our calculation about whether it could be batel or not. But he says, we're not worried about the Sefer Torah itself, we're worried about the ta'ut, about the error that was made in it, and that error is not considered a davar chashuv, and he gives a parallel example from the world of kashrut. In the world of kashrut, if you have what's called a chaticha ru'ya lehitkabed, that you have a piece of something, of a food, let's say, the piece of fish, a piece of meat, a piece of steak, which is a nice enough piece that you would serve it to an important guest. So it's ha'ru'ya ru'ya lehitkabed. You can honor people with it. So let's say, you know, a steak is a good example, or I'm thinking of salmon that comes in those slab of cuts. So that's so if those things absorb something prohibited, so we have a problem, because the chaticha riyali kabed is the kind of thing that's important enough that we don't generally say that it's batel. But, says the Eliyahu, that's only true if the chaticha itself was significant. So in other words, let's say I had a pile of steaks, and I mix them together, there's a steak on the counter, and I just throw it in with all my other steaks in it. I can't tell the difference between them, but then, you know, whoever was the owner of that kitchen, whoever was involved in that kitchen, comes to this, where's that kitchen? The steak was on the counter, and it turns out that steak was from an animal that had not been slaughtered properly. It's still beef, and that's why I can't tell the difference between the other steaks, but it had an improper shechita. It was there on the counter because they were planning on giving it to a non-Jew or throwing it away or doing whatever they were doing with it. So now, that's called a chaticha ruya litkabed. It was the kind of thing that you could honor somebody else with, and that creates more problems because we don't generally say that it's patel, that it gets nullified. But the Eliyahu pointed out, that's only true if it's usher, if it's prohibited on its own, in and of itself. But if you have a chaticha haruya litkabed, an important piece of food, right, which would not ordinarily be batel, and the problem, though, isn't the chaticha itself. The problem is that it absorbed iser, it absorbed prohibited materials, meaning it turns out, not that the steak was from an animal that wasn't shechted, but it's a steak that, you know, that had, non-kosher wine spilled on it, right? So, and therefore, it's absorbed the non-kosher wine, or something else like that. So there we would say it is batel, after chaticha chashuv, even though the piece is chashuv, and therefore can't be batel. The balua, that stuff which is mixed up in it, isn't chashuv, and therefore it can follow the general rules of bitl. Now this is a very important, very significant, and interesting question in the laws of any kind of bitl, which is, what do we mean by being mevatel something? So when Chazal made the rule, I'm pretty sure chaticha ruya lekabed is a rule that Chazal made. When rabbinically, we say we don't allow important items to become batel, so the Yad Eliyahu is claiming that's only if the items themselves are a prohibited item, because they have that importance. But if the items became prohibited only because of something that was absorbed into them, that's not really fundamentally part of the item he's claiming. And therefore, that will follow the usual rules of bitl, meaning the usual rules of bitl are that prohibited material that gets mixed in with a larger mixture, you get to ignore it. Now, if it's a chashuv thing, if it's an important thing, you're not able to ignore it because it has its own importance. It never becomes ignorable because it's significant. But if the item isn't what's the problem, the fact that the item isn't ignorable doesn't matter to us, right? That's the way the contention of the Yad Eliyahu. Now he's going to apply that to the Sefer Torah. And he's going to say, so when it comes to this sefer, this Torah scroll, it's not, the Torah scroll is what's kosher, it's what's important, but what makes the problem is the mistake. Now the mistake, now this is something the Chatzam Sofer is going to disagree with, we'll get to it, but I'm just giving you the Yad Eliyahu's claim is, the mistake isn't the important piece here. The mistake, and the mistake isn't the Torah itself. Now that, to me, is an interesting question also. Is it true? If you have a Sefer Torah that's written, and then a mistake creeps into it, is that exactly parallel to, you know, something non-kosher gets absorbed into a piece of meat? So we're going to talk about that in the Chatzam Sofer, but just to start the conversation, to start the thinking process. Is when a piece of meat absorbs non-kosher wine, right, and we can't tell what it is, so that's completely extraneous to it. So there you could say, oh, see, that non-kosher wine has no chashivut of its own, it has no importance, and you can't say, well, the piece itself is an important piece, and therefore there's a problem, because the piece itself is not oster, because you say, that's where the claim is. The piece may be usher now, but it's usher almost coincidentally to its importance. So therefore, the importance doesn't affect us as an part of it. That's and that would be the claim about the piece of meat. Now, when it comes to the Torah, and a mistake falls into a sefer Torah, so it didn't come from the outside. It's either that it wasn't written properly to begin with, which would be a problem, because then you'd wonder whether it ever became kosher. But let's say it wasn't like that. It got faded, or the mistake, you know, cropped up in it somehow. It's not really extraneous to it. It's not really external to it. And therefore, I would have imagined somebody being able to say that that's really part of it originally. So that's but the Yad Eliyahu disagrees. So writing in the first attempt that we have, the Binyan Tzion is going to discuss for us, is in the late 1600s, early 1700s. Yad Eliyahu is saying a mistake in a sefer Torah is more similar to absorbed prohibitions into a chatichah riyah l'kabeid, into an important piece of food. Chatam Sofer, you know, the Chatam Sofer passed away in 1839, I think, so it's like he's 1020s, he's barely a generation ahead, or basically a generation ahead of the Binyan Tzion, or maybe exactly a generation of the Binyan Tzion. So the Binyan Tzion now says the Chatam Sofer disagrees. Chatam Sofer disagrees. First of all, he says that Bittul doesn't apply here, because the Chatam Sofer, she'efshar le'verurei u'lahakir ha'isur. When we talk about nullification, so you think about the example that we're talking about, it's all been cases where we can't recognize the prohibition anymore. It's a piece of steak that's indistinguishable from other pieces of steak but had a problem to it. It's items have been absorbed into something. It's things that we have no way of figuring out. But Chatam Sofer said, but that's not true here, because you can check and find the mistake and then you won't have to worry about bittul. Meaning nullification is where we cannot get rid of the prohibited items and we can't identify them. But here, if you just track down the error in Breishit somewhere, you should be okay. So Yaakov Ettinger responds and says, but that doesn't work for us here, because the amount of effort it would take to find the error is such an amount of effort that we can't give it right now, because we have to read the Sefer Torah right now. And therefore, Yaakov Ettinger says, it goes back to being a case of Yevshah Levarua. We cannot find and remove the error, and therefore Bittul should apply. And the Chatzim Sofer eventually agrees to that. He says that since you can't check it out and identify the error in a zman muat, in a short period of time, then you're not going to stop Kriyas HaTorah, you're not going to stop the Torah reading with a bracha, and there's a Magen Avraham that says that as well. In a different context, Magen Avraham says, let's say you need to check your tzitzit, you generally check your tzitzit before making a bracha on them, but if the checking would take so long that you wouldn't be able to join a minyan anymore, so that counts as you don't have time to check, you're not able to check, right? There's not able to, and there's not, so they're saying that not enough time for various important other reasons counts as not able to. But the Chatam Sofer offered another problem, and he says, he doesn't like, yeah, he's wondering, at the Yad Eliyahu's idea, he is surprised at the Yad Eliyahu's claim, and then he writes, Ve'inam lefi chavodo, meaning he's so certain that Yad Eliyahu is wrong, he thinks it's a little embarrassing for the Yad Eliyahu that he wrote this way. Ve'inam lefi chavodo, they don't match his honor. Why is he comparing it to a chaticha, why is he comparing it to an important piece of meat, an important piece of food, let's say an important piece of meat that absorbed milk, where it's not batel, Chazal never says, so now the piece of meat, this is the case we're talking about with milk, piece of meat is now itself prohibited. It's true. It became prohibited by something that wasn't chashuv. But now it's prohibited. So the whole piece is prohibited. So therefore, the chashivut of the whole piece should apply, and therefore, it's not batel. If that, once you say that, then back to the Sefer Torah. Here, the Chatam Zofar, I think, has a much stronger argument. Back to the Sefer Torah, it may be true that the mistake is itself important, but the mistake affects the entire Sefer Torah, and that Sefer Torah, that Torah scroll, is something that's reality is an important item, and therefore should not be batel. Chatam Zofar writes, "V'hu davar pashut l'chol mevin." Right? It's clear and obvious to whoever thinks about it, and therefore you shouldn't rely on the Yad Eliyahu. And once you say that, then you can't do Bitul Berov anymore either. You can't rely on the fact that it's nullified when it's in a majority of kosher Sefer Torah, and you have a whole big problem. So, the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Etlin, just says, but I don't understand the Chasam Sofer. Meaning the Chasam Sofer is so clear and so sure that he's right about this comparison, that Chaticha, Riyali Kabed, meat that absorbs some milk, that even though the milk itself is not important enough that it could have been batel, but now that it creates basar b'chalav, and now the whole piece of meat is prohibited, so he says that's similar to the Sefer Torah. The Yaakov Etlin just says, and he says it's clear to everybody, it's not clear to me. I think the Yad Eliyahu is right. Why is that? Because he says, because when meat absorbs milk, that's a whole different thing than general absorption of prohibited material. That's why before I was a little careful to use the example of, let's say, it absorbs some kind of non-kosher wine. Because in Basar B'chalav, when meat and milk mix together, there's a new idea that's more clear than another situation, which was called Katicha Atzma Naseit Nevela. The piece itself, the whole piece, becomes basar b'chalav. I mean, when we talk about bittel, even in basar b'chalav, even milk and meat, there's a possibility of bittel. Forget the chaticha riyad kabeit example. Forget whether the piece is significant. But let's say in general, in basar b'chalav, you have milk and meat that's cooked together, and it falls into a mixture. Let's say it's not chaticha riyad kabeit, you don't have that complication, and you don't even mevatel it. How much are you mevatel? So let's say it's, 3 ounces of milk fell into a big thing of steak, a big piece of steak, of meat, and then that fell into a bunch of a stew, right? So, and got absorbed into it, so we don't know which piece it is, we don't know this. How much stew do you need to nullify it? So theoretically, you could have imagined somebody claiming, well, there's only 3 ounces of milk. Let's even say that 3 ounces of milk mixed with 3 ounces of meat, and you'll say 6 times 60, 360 ounces of the stew has 360 ounces, let's say, then you should be okay, right? But that's not what we say. We say chaticha atzma naaseit nevela. When it comes to milk and meat together, the whole piece that it fell into, we have to treat as non-kosher. That's a special rule, Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger points out, about basar b'chalav, milk and meat, that doesn't apply to other isurim. He points out that in Yoredeya Kuf Aleph, chapter 101, paragraph 2, the Shulchan Aruch rules that even according to the opinion, there's a debate about this, that you can have chaticha atzma naaseit nevela for other prohibitions, that you might need to calculate according to the whole piece, like I said, but those opinions still agree that if that piece of meat was usually thought of as a chaticha riyali kabeit, was usually thought of as a significant important piece of meat that could be served to, valued guests and stuff like that, and it absorbed prohibited materials, and this is a person who holds chaticha atzma naaseit nevela, the piece itself all becomes prohibited, still doesn't think those two would go together. Still doesn't think that if you had this chaticha ha-riyali kabeit, this piece of meat that was originally usually thought of as the kind of meat you would serve to important guests, and then it absorbs other prohibitions than chalav, non-milk prohibitions, and this opinion still holds chaticha atzma naaseit nevela, you might think, well, now you've got a double whammy. The piece itself becomes, you might think, well, it's got prohibition in it. It's a chaticha riyali kabeit. It is a piece that you can give to guests that has the importance of it, and therefore is generally not batel. Oh, you'll tell me, but the isser, the prohibition, prohibited items that fell into it, should be able to be batel, should be able to be nullified because they're not important. Nope, because we hold chaticha atzma naaseit nevela. We think the whole piece gets implicated by the prohibition in it. So the answer is, Shulchan Aruch tells us that's not true. Shulchan Aruch tells us that these two things don't join together. That even according to the opinion, that you have to calculate the Isser as if the whole piece was the Isser. That's one aspect of an opinion. That opinion would still not hold that when you were doing that, if that piece we're talking about was important enough that we generally call it Ruyali Kabed, we generally call it, worthy of giving to guests, we would not do that here because you don't put the two of them together. So that shows, says Rav Yaakov Etlinger, that shows that other than milk and meat, we in fact don't say that the Isser that the prohibited item becomes a factor and a characteristic of the entire thing. It's different to milk and meat because there, the prohibition is only created by the synergy of the milk and the meat. And therefore, the meat is, in fact, all implicated. It's not just that the meat becomes, as it were, infected with the prohibition. It's that the meat becomes implicated because where I used to have a piece of meat and then some milk separately, when the milk goes into it and gets cooked into it, it's not that I have milk and meat in a mixture now. I do have that. But it's that it's become basar b'chalav. It's become milk and meat cooked together. That's a whole new item. And that's why in that one situation, even though the milk wasn't itself important, if the piece that it fell into was a chatichari yad kabed, it can never become batal because it's become fully implicated. But that issue of fully implicated is important. Because even according to the opinions that say, chaticha atzma naseit nevela, even according to the opinions that say, that when prohibited materials fall into a piece, that whole piece becomes, at least in terms of calculating bittul, calculating nullification, becomes implicated. It doesn't become implicated to the extent that if it's a chaticha ha'riyalit kabed, if it's a piece that could have been served to important guests, that aspect it will happen too. The point being, I think, that even those who say you'll have to calculate nullification based on the whole piece, they don't really mean the whole piece becomes fully implicated. They mean that for calculation of bittul purposes, we have to count it. But milk and meat is completely different. So since Rav Yaakov Ellinger, if you're thinking now about the Sefer Torah, so the mistake doesn't become an inherent part of the Torah itself. It's more like Isser fell into a mixture. Now, I think that the Chatam Sofer could easily, if you were sitting there with the Benyitzio, say, I completely disagree with you. I completely don't understand what you're saying. I could easily imagine the Chatam Sofer saying, no, it's much more similar to milk and meat together because every letter of the Sefer Torah is vital to constituting the entire Sefer Torah. With other prohibitions in meat, let's say, you know, non-kosher wine that gets absorbed into some meat, so the non-kosher wine is completely external to it. But here I can easily imagine the Chatam Sofer arguing that each letter is not external to it at all, and therefore when the mistake happens or the mistake falls into the Torah, it's a part of the whole thing, and therefore, so I think you have a fundamental disagreement between the Chatam Sofer on one side, the Yad Eliyahu, and the Binyan Tzion. Now, the reason why it's between the Binyan Tzion is holding that way is because it shows you that even after seeing the Chatam Sofer's arguments, he could still prefer or understand the Yad Eliyahu to be more correct. So it's an example of where, you know, great Torah scholars, learned Torah scholars, knowing all the material, still end up seeing the idea to say it differently as to whether the mistake that fell into the Sefer Torah becomes a part of the whole Sefer Torah. And since the Sefer Torah is an important item, it can't become batel. That was the Chatam Sofer's view. Or is it something, as if something extraneous had happened to the Sefer Torah, and therefore, even though it's a problem, it doesn't become, it can still be open to bittul. So therefore, Yaakov Ellinger rules, and he's willing to disagree with the Chatam Sofer based on that Yad Eliyahu, that if it's at a time when you can't check anymore, and that counts as Iyasha Levarer, we can't find the problem. So whenever there's an Iyasha Levarer, that opens us up to the possibilities of Bittul. Then he says you can read any one of the Sefer Torah, because the Sefer Torah that had the error in it is Batel in this mixture. But then he says, after you've read it that Shabbos, so then you should look again. Meaning, he's saying that nullification in our context here of the Sefer Torah isn't a one-time thing. Since the question of being able to find the error was an issue of time as much as ability, so therefore once the time factor goes away, you have to check again. And therefore he thinks you have to check all of this farm to the extent that you can, because we're not supposed to leave around Sefer Torah that have errors in them, because, you know, one day you'll stumble across the actual Sefer Torah that had the error, you'll find the error, and then you'll be stuck, and therefore we're not supposed to do that. We're supposed to, to the extent of our abilities, make sure that all our Sefer Torah are kosher all the time, are valid, have no mistakes in them all the time. But if you looked and you didn't find, and you look again in some of them, so you looked and you didn't find, you looked again in some of them, so Rav Yaakov Ellinger says you can sort of stop and rely on these Sefer Torahs. So meaning, let's say there are 15 Sefer Torahs in the group. One of them is the non-kosher one. I checked all of them, and then I couldn't find it, and then I used one of them for Shabbos. Now I have a chance to check again, and I checked 10, and I don't find it. Rav Yaakov Ellinger says you can actually stop if you want to, although I think he should theoretically think that you should keep checking because you want to find the one with the problem, because we're not supposed to leave around Sefer Torah with the problem. But here he says, when you stop, you can, or let's say you have to stop for some reason, you can rely on any one of those you've already checked, because then you're allowed to assume, there are many cases in Halakha where you're allowed to assume that if I know there's a problem, and as far as I can tell, the problem isn't in this group, I can assume it's in that other group. That's called Tilia, it could be Tole, I can assume, and that the Esther. So, for example, in Gemara Nida talks about if you have a situation there, a situation where we see evidence that one of the three women has produced some kind of a discharge that would render her tamei. But we don't know which one of the three women. So, if one of those women is already tamei, is already in her time of the in her menstrual period of time when she is ritually not pure and able to live with her husband, we will assume that that ketan, that stain that we found, came from her. That's called tilia. So too, if you have mounds of something where there's a tumor, there's some like an insect mixed in that creates tumor, that creates ritual impurity mixed into different piles of into a pile of, let's say, wheat or something. We don't know which it is, and the piles got mixed up with other piles. So if you check a few piles and it's not there, the halacha is you're allowed to assume it's in the other ones, and therefore assume that these are just fine, rather than say, well, maybe you just missed it. And therefore, if you check all the Sefer Torah and you didn't find it, and then you read from, then you check a few, you can assume it's in one of the other ones. But then if you check them all again, if you really went through all of them and you didn't find it, so then ideally you should keep checking to the extent that you have time until you find the one that's the problem. So that is the Binyan Tzion on questions of when you have a Sefer Torah puzzle, when you have a Sefer Torah that has some problem with it, what you do and whether or not you can apply the rules of Bitul of nullification, which takes us back into important kashrus ideas that we don't always remember of nullification as well, in terms of chatichas manas in nevela. When do we think, or do we think, that a piece of food that absorbs prohibition, does the whole food become prohibited, and therefore we have to calculate 60 times that food, or is it only the amount of prohibited material that went into it? And there we saw a distinction between that, between basar bechalav and the other ones, that in basar bechalav, that milk and meat together, there it was more clear that we say chatichas manas in nevela, that the piece itself becomes prohibited because the creation of the prohibition only happens by virtue of the mixing of the milk and the meat. There is no isser. It's not that the milk is prohibited. The milk is fine. It's only prohibited because it got into the meat and they got cooked together. So therefore, we would say chatichat ma naset nevela, the piece itself becomes the whole piece, to a much different extent than usual, to the extent that if this piece that we're talking about was a chaticha ruyalit kabed, was a piece of significance, we wouldn't allow that to become nullified. We wouldn't say that if it falls into other pieces, that it becomes nullified because of chaticha ruyalit kabed. So those are kashrus ideas, and they came up in our Sefer Torah, because the question is, how do we treat the error that fell into the Sefer Torah? So first, we also saw the question of efshel levarer. When we have doubts about something, there are doubts that we have a way of verifying or finding the problem. There are doubts that we don't. So if we have a way of verifying it, we're not supposed to rely on bitul, we're not supposed to rely on nullification, because we can verify it. Binyan Tzion and the Chatam Sofer agreed, pointed out that not having time, because you have to use the Sefer Torah, it counts as e of shal levarer, as it's impossible to find the error. You might say, well, but it's possible, you just have to take more time. But I don't have that time. So that would, by the way, get into questions of how you define time, meaning let's say it's Tuesday, and I would need 24 hours to check all the Sefer Torah to the extent that I want to, but I have to, you know, people have to work, they have to make a living, this and that. So would that count as efshel levarer or not? Would that count as you have enough time or you don't have time? I think that's an interesting question that does not come up in our tshuva, but it's a reminder that we're talking about efshel levarer. And the Magen Avraham pointed out that you can even say, if I don't have time to check my tzitzis before minyan is going to happen, and I need to dive with the minyan, that too counts as e efshel levarer. So all of these were the issues that came up with the Sefer Torah in terms of its nullification. It's important. Is the error inside of it count as a characteristic of the entire Sefer Torah? That was the claim of the Chatam Sofer, because he didn't think it was parallel to ordinary pieces of meat. He thought it was more parallel to the Basar Bechalav case, the milk and meat case, because he claims that every error is a part of the letters that make up the Sefer Torah, and it all binds together to make a Sefer Torah. The Yad Eliyahu and the Binyan Tzion disagreed, and they felt that an error is more like an extraneous prohibition that falls into something, and therefore the concept of of a piece that's important not becoming batal ever doesn't apply here, because it's the mistake that's the issue, it's not the whole piece that's the issue. So this has been a responsible day for the 29th of Adar Sheni, and really for a completion of a series that has taught me a lot, that has been very valuable to me, has been an anchor of my Torah study for quite a while now. And if you're listening to this, I thank you for doing so. My email is grothst@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to know your feedback and your thoughts, and I hope that we have many opportunities to learn Torah together and to learn a broad range of Torah, as a responsive day has shown us a broad range of Torah scholars and a broad range of Torah ideas, and that we never let ourselves get trapped into thinking of Torah as being the narrow few topics that we happen to come across in our daily lives, because Torah is much broader. Arucha me'aretz midah, it's longer than the earth in measure, or chava min yam, and broader than the sea. And we always merit to study it in its fullness to the extent of our abilities, and to merit to be among those who study Torah regularly and are benefited from absorbing the lessons of Torah. Thank you too, Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, to David Hochhauser, and to the OU for making these shiurim available to you online. My name is Gideon Rothstein, and this has been A Responsum A Day.